John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Thank you very much, Bill Rock, for the intro. Yes, indeed. Both here in Studio 4. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. Who is in 1, 2, and 3?
Studios 1, 2, and 3, yes. I believe they're empty at the moment, but Joan Hamburg has one, Joy Brown has one, Mike Gallagher has another.
And you have your own.
Well, I share this with Governor Patterson in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So that's what this is
all about.
Does
he leave it clean afterwards and respectful and write your note, John, here's what you should say tomorrow morning?
No, he doesn't leave the note, but he does leave it in order, or somebody does anyway. Yesterday, speaking of disorder, obviously when the president comes to New York City, things get a little disrupted, but he was down here World Trade Center.
Yeah, I mean, it does tie up traffic. In all fairness, he doesn't come that often. This is campaign time. They're raising money, so you'd expect a lot of it. But, you know, for the past 3 years, it's something, it's annoying when it's in your neighborhood, but it is what it is.
Part of the price of being New York, right?
Yeah, and in the grand scheme of things, it only lasts for a relatively short time. Well, if you're stuck in traffic, you don't think so.
No, or if you were trying to get the PATH train yesterday for 3 hours, you don't think about that either.
Why, the PATH train didn't work?
It was closed yesterday for 3 hours, yeah, because of the president. They shut it down.
Did they, really?
Yeah, which is extraordinary. Now, do you happen to know whether or not they actually consider those sort of things?
I have no idea. That's the Port Authority. The MTA, another state agency, MTA, kept the subways running, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when the president's in town.
The Secret Service wanted it closed down.
Well, yeah. You don't have to say yes. I went, this is our city. You go up and down. I take the subway up and down all the time, but particularly when there's an event in town that will screw up traffic, it's a little bit easier. But I did meet the president, Governor Christie and Governor Cuomo, and I met the president and the first lady, and we, before he got there, the rest of us went up to the 90th floor, which is the first open floor. The siding is up all the others, so there you could walk over the edge and look out.
Did you walk to the edge?
Yeah, sure.
That doesn't make your skin crawl?
No.
Okay.
I don't have acrophobia. but it reminds me it was the same view as the World Trade Center. I remember, to go to 102nd floor, windows in the world. And then we took a little tour with the president and, some pictures for the cameras, and then went downstairs and shook the hands of some construction workers and signed a beam.
I've got a regular guy that I've been going to now for 5 years. His name is George Collins. He works for Local 46. He's one of the supervisors of the guys that are doing the rebar and the concrete work up on the Freedom Tower. We go to him on a regular basis. The pride with which these guys and gals are doing this work is really extraordinary.
Oh, yeah. It's a great project.
They're very excited.
It's a great job. It's a great project because it's a great job for them. It lasts a long time. It's also an iconic building, and they feel they're part of America and New York, and all of that is great. The most impressive thing is that what is probably the world's most complex construction site ever, with the exception of a tragedy where we lost two firefighters, it has been done safely. No other fatalities. We can't forget those two firefighters. It was just so tragic.
Has work begun on the museum? Restarted?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
Still working on that. But there's an enormous amount of construction. For the first time from the 90th floor, I could look down and see the Calatrava PATH station. And now you can see the oval outline, the steel. It's still underground, but all the base is there in that shape. So you can start to really get a feel for exactly where it is and what it will look like. They're about to, the GSA is about to sign for a couple hundred thousand square feet. I think they've got about 50-odd%, maybe touch over, of the main iconic building already rented. And once, it's the more you rent, the easier the next rental is. There's nothing wrong with all the space will be taken up. We just need the economy to recover a little bit. And the good news is New York is doing better than the rest of the country. The bad news is the country and New York are not doing as well as you would like it to do.
Is Silverstein, how's he doing renting 7? Do you know? Have you heard anything about that?
So 7's all done.
It is all rented.
Yeah, that's all rented.
Or is it 4? Number 4? I'm
4
sorry,
that
four
he's working on. Yeah,
to.
I don't know where he stands on that. Larry's got a lot of guts. He holds out for when he thinks the market's going to recover, and you got to give him a lot of credit.
Speaking of development, why don't we touch on the Willits Point thing?
Willits Point and Homeport and Staten Island have gone on forever. Homeport, I'm happy to say, is finally going, and now I think Willits Point is finally going. These, particularly Willits Point, there's an enormous number of lawsuits. Lots of small automobile body shops, repair facilities, and I think we've thought this out pretty well. We're giving training to people who work there so they can get a GED and get other jobs. We've found for the bigger ones other space for them to move their businesses to. But the bottom line is some people just don't want to move at all, and you can't have that. You can't have one person stopping the development of a whole chunk of the city. And if you look on a map, you'll get a feel for why Willits Point is so important to the development of the city. It is a very big piece of land and is perfect place, great transportation, right by the airport. There's Long Island Railroad, there's subways.
The bridges come in there.
Bridges, yeah. I mean, it all's together. You have City Field, you have the U.S. Tennis Association.
Which I
complex.
Understand they're going to put $500 million
they're putting
into.
Private money, they're putting another $500 million in that, building some new stadiums and grandstands, and it creates a lot of jobs. So all of this is finally coming together. And the group that won, what we originally wanted to do, no developer was willing to run the risk. So you have to go and change and say, okay, what can you get done? And the winner of the second competition was Related, which is building Hudson Yards, one of the big, two or three biggest developers in the city, maybe the biggest. And Sterling Equities, which is the Wilpons, who own the Mets and City Field. And their bid, and they even put up, I think it was like $35 million as a guarantee that it will be done on time.
And so, what is the on time? Do you, is there
over
a date?
The next, yeah, I mean, in 13, 14, 15, different mm-hmm. parts of it. And it's really quite creative. And they're going to do something on both sides of City Field. And there's a staging. You do one, and then you go to the other side, back and forth. And they've got, which I think is phenomenally clever, you know, parking lots you need for stadiums. They're big. But most of the time, the only 80 games or whatever it is they play, the rest of the time it's all empty. What we're going to do is these are going to be open ball fields with AstroTurf kind of cover. And when there's a game, you roll that up. You use it as a parking lot. Kids can't play that time. But they'll have lots of facilities for all the other time. Now, somebody will write a bad story about, oh, they don't have it all the time. Right now, they got nothing. So this will be a big boon.
And will the tennis stadium be able to use that parking facility as well? Because they've always had a parking issue over there.
Yeah, but I think
there.
It might be a touch too far away.
Too far away.
Yeah, that's far away. 35.
All right.
It'll be a long
way. What was the big thing about Willits Point that you wanted to do that you were unable to, that you couldn't get done? Was it the schools, the colleges?
No.
Or?
Well, nobody knows whether they want to build a convention center, although, Governor Cuomo, I'm sure, will look at that now that he's, says I got to rethink this. His original concept, and I keep giving him credit. Look, he's trying new things, and if one doesn't work, you try another. You don't walk away and say, oh, the end of the world. And Willits Point is something I think he should look at, but there's certainly going to be a hotel. There's certainly going to be ball fields. There's certainly going to be housing and stores. And it is a piece of land that was used for industrial purposes, so these enormous remediation that you have to do to get rid of all of the crap in the ground, which is leaching into the water. And so you really, it's not just there, it's leaching out into and hurting our water around the city. And so you got to do that. And also, there's no sewers there, it's low, and so everything would flood, and the enormous amount of infrastructure needed. And this will get at least half it going. And then, look, when the economy's better, somebody will come along.
All right, Mr. Mayor, why don't you sit tight here and let me make a dollar or two. It's 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. We will give you the opportunity to ask some questions. Show 22 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, Friday edition. The governor and the legislature in Albany are wringing their hands and trying to come up with what I have called a really complicated and distorted teacher evaluation system, my words.
Well,
reaction?
What they're actually talking about is the disclosure of evaluations. The last bill that was passed requires the unions and the local cities or counties, wherever, depending on where you are, to negotiate an evaluation system. That was the kind of bill we had before, and it didn't work. The union just would never have agreed to anything that was a real evaluation. And so I don't know there's anything here to talk about because at the moment
there's no process.
Well, maybe the rest of the state. There's certainly not here in the city. Hopefully we get together and, you know, but you have to have something that really evaluates, and some people don't want to be evaluated or don't want others to be evaluated. So if you don't believe in evaluations, you're not going to agree to a system that has real evaluations. What this is about is disclosure, and I'm not sure really where it stands. You know, the governor's got to work with the legislature, and he and I were joking yesterday, you know, it's a democracy and you really got to work hard. And I think he's doing a good job at working with the legislature. How this is going to come out, I don't know. Whether he'll get what he wants or what one house wants or the other house wants or some combination, which is, I guess, what democracy is all about. What you can't do, and I don't know where they stand because newspapers said different things, if a parent has to go to the principal's office to see an evaluation, it is designed deliberately to keep the average parent that we have in this city from ever seeing an evaluation. This is an outrage. It is just deliberately designed to keep them, because these parents are the families in our city. Either both parents work, or a lot of families are only one parent and they work, and they just can't do that. Then you're going to have the whole problem of intimidation. Either a parent threatening a teacher, you give my kid a grade, or I'm going to go and ask for your evaluation and talk to the principal, and who knows what happens in that room when you're talking to the principal. Or it's the reverse. The teacher can say, you know, if your kid doesn't do this or you don't do this, I'm, you know, you just can't. If you go, I'm going to look at my evaluation, then I'm going to do some damage to you. It's just unworkable. Now, one of the arguments is, look, police and fire don't have public evaluations. But that's not a comparison. That's apples to oranges. You can't pick your firehouse. You can't pick your police precinct. You can move your kid from one school to another. And you can ask for a transfer within a school, whereas you can't transfer within a precinct or within a firehouse. And remember, police and fire rotate around. They cover for each other, or they move from one precinct to one firehouse to another. And they all work as a team, the police department and the fire department, whereas teachers tend to work one or just with one and an aide or two teachers in some cases together. But it's not the whole school in the same classroom in front of your kid. So it's just apples and oranges to say, well, police and fire don't get evaluated, so therefore teachers shouldn't. But to have an evaluation system where nobody can really, in a practical sense, get the data is just not giving you an evaluation system, and it's ridiculous.
I have to ask you, have you and the chancellor talked about if there is an evaluation system, and you've got teachers that run the gamut from A to D, if you go in as a parent and you've got a teacher that's teaching your kid with a C, and you've got an opportunity. Isn't everybody like the restaurant grades? Aren't they all going to morph to the A's?
Well, nobody morphs to the A's in restaurant grades. You have to earn it.
Well, I understand, but I have the choice of going to an A and not a B.
Well, but you can talk to the principal. You can maybe get your kid moved from one to another.
Well, isn't everybody going to want that?
Isn't that wonderful? Well, why would you as a parent not want to have the best teacher? So the teachers have to do exactly what the restaurants have to do. The restaurants have to make their facilities cleaner to get the A. That's the whole idea. It'd be wonderful if everybody got an A, as long as it's not faked, as long as it's deserved. It'd be wonderful if every teacher we had was top rated. Now, the real world is not every restaurant's going to be an A, and not every teacher's going to be perfect. And what we're trying to do is to find which teachers need help and give them the help. If in the end the help doesn't change, we have to run the system for the kids, not for the teachers. And I was listening before on your show earlier this morning when, you know, you called this an outrage. This is just a total cave to those who don't want evaluations. You can read that as for the unions, but in all fairness to the unions, that's not the only one. And incidentally, I don't know what's right for the rest of the state. I can tell you what's right for New York City. Our parents can't go and ask for, and it's, I know nobody likes to have their performance out there, but your performance every day, John, and my performance and most people's performance, it's in your company, you know who's doing good and who's doing poorly, and your customers know. And this isn't any different. But if you want to improve the school systems, you have to have a real evaluation system. And having it without disclosure, don't waste your time. And I just, the extra bureaucracy that we would have, and the principals don't have the time. And then you're going to have, you know, well, you said this and I said that. And it doesn't work. It's a nice idea. But if you're going to have an evaluation system, you got to give the parents without them having to ask the evaluations. And what some of the newspapers argue, it's the public's information. Public has a right to know. Employees might not like it, but, you know, the employer has a right to know what's going on. And the people who are paying you have a right to know what's going on. And you don't have to take the job.
There was another example this week of a teacher in a classroom molesting an 8-year-old.
That's the other thing, that there's this Bill 3020A, I think it's called, and the whole idea is, should the chancellor be able to take somebody out of the classroom? There was a story.
They're not going to give you any, or they're not going to go even touch this thing this session.
I don't know whether they are or they aren't. Leaving teachers who are pedophiles in the classroom, how can a legislator go back and explain to their voters that that's what they did? And this stuff, well, it never came to a vote. That's ridiculous. We all know that if the legislators want to say something, then they can stand up and say, I want this bill to come up and I'm going to vote this way or that way, whichever way they want to do it. But blaming the leadership and saying, oh, it never came up, therefore I didn't, you know, that's really up to the newspapers to go and to say, which way are you going to vote here, yes or no? And then go to the leader and say, okay, here's a list of people that say yes, here's the people that say, bring it up for a vote. But this is, think about it, we're letting people who are pedophiles stay in the classroom. And then there was a judge today that blasted the city for letting this teacher that was having an affair with another teacher in a room and blaming us that, oh, that's too harsh. She's a great teacher. Yeah, she may be a great teacher, but you don't have a sexual affair in the school. And if that's your judgment, you shouldn't be in the school. Nobody questions her right to have an affair outside with anybody she wants. But in the school, if that's what you do, you don't have the judgment, you shouldn't be in front of the classroom.
And
come on.
And again, all of these arguments circle around exactly the same thing, and that is the leadership of the union pushing back on these things, right?
Well, yeah, it's easy to blame the legislature and the governor and say they're caving unions. There are other factors as well, and they may have legitimate ideas and views as to what. So I don't know that I'd go so far as to say it's a total cave, but it's certainly what the unions want, and it's certainly not in the public's interest.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me take a break here. Joe Bartlett's got a little bit more news. We'll be back again. Don't forget, 800-321-3 before 9 o'clock. Call for independent monitor of the NYPD. Well, where's the Bloomberg meter on that idea?
I think we have them already. There are 5 district attorneys, 2 federal prosecutors, a civilian complaint review board. You add another level, it's just more bureaucracy, more expense, and less policing. There's no agency in our city that has as much oversight. Plus, remember, most news organizations have a full-time reporter following the police department, and in some cases more than one. I don't know. There's no other agency that has that. This is just, you know, if you don't like police and you don't want to go after the bad guys, I suppose you do this as a smokescreen or something.
Talk to me about the bill that would require cab drivers to take a course so that they could identify hookers and counsel them.
I saw the picture in the paper. It said, you know, are these prostitutes, Mike, or something like that? I thought to myself, what could this story possibly be about? The city council wants to pass a bill. I have no idea whether we're in favor, administration is willing to go along or not. I haven't talked to anybody about it. Cab drivers, who they would argue participate in taking prostitutes to their assignations.
Hopefully not assassinations.
Are part of the problem, and it should be outlawed. Whether it's enforceable and a good idea, I don't know.
Seems kind of wacky to me, but that's okay. That's not for me to decide.
I will say that just in reading the headline, I started to think for a second, you know, if I were a young lady and I dressed in a sporty way, or however you want to phrase it, and there's nothing wrong with that. And maybe it's not appropriate to go to the workplace, but at night, sometimes, sure, why not? And I would not want somebody thinking that I'm a prostitute.
No, of course not. I mean, and nor should they be given the job of determining that.
Right. Well, that's another thing.
Cab fare increase. You pro con 17%.
They haven't had an increase in a long time. Cost of fuel has gone up. The drivers aren't making a lot of money. The owners of the medallions have done very well. And you can follow that. There's a company that owns a bunch of medallions. TAXI is its NASDAQ ticker symbol, and it's near its all-time high, and it stayed there, even though we're going to sell a lot more medallions. The marketplace doesn't think that's going to hurt the value of these. So the owners have done well, but the drivers aren't. And you want good drivers who treat it as a career, know where they're going, know how to drive well, courteous and all that sort of stuff. And if you're going to attract those kinds of people, you got to pay them well. So the whole idea here is to give a raise and have the money go to the drivers who just if you work 10 hours a day, 5-6 days a week, you know, maybe you could make 30 grand, and it's hard work. You have to keep going and going and going and going. And, you're always looking for fares. It's not an easy job. And if you want good people, you got to pay them. And it's like taxi cab fees are much cheaper here than in most other cities.
I know that you have put an RFP out on the parking meters. I don't know if you call this privatizing them, but coming up with you're not looking at selling off the system.
No, Chicago did that. We're not selling off the system. We're not letting the private sector set the rates. It is simply the idea is, and we'll see whether anybody really comes up with something good, letting the private sector with its money provide technology and letting us rent that technology from them rather than trying to do it yourself. Some things we should be doing ourselves. You really want, for example, police and fire to be the
way you want it.
The city, it's just too important. On the other hand, there are lots of things that you can, if the private sector can do it bigger. Now, some of the public sector unions, those are our jobs. The city's job is not to, or the state's job, or the federal government's job is not to employ as many people as possible. It's to employ those that are necessary to provide the services that you can't get in the private sector as efficiently, cheaply, or as reliably. And when it comes to the military, police, fire, those for sure. Education, there's a lot of, we have 1,100,000 kids in our public school system. We have roughly 250,000 kids in private schools, so private schools are an alternative. I think we should have a big public school system. I've always been a big supporter. I think we should pay our teachers competitively with around the world. I think we should attract the best and the brightest, evaluate them and tell the parents and, all of that kind of stuff. But so that's sort of one of those things you can have it both ways. And then there are some things that we can't keep up with all the technology. And also city government has a different standard. The private sector can try some things. If it doesn't work, they say cost of doing business. In the public sector, if you do it, you get vilified and it's a big story in the paper.
Because I read that some of this technology might give the city / whatever company the opportunity to price differently.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what you'd want to do.
The supply and demand.
Yeah, you want to, there's no reason not to have higher fees when everybody wants them and lower fees when they don't to attract, to get the most revenue. Or you can have deliberately high fees in some neighborhoods because you want turnover. Store owners want that. Store owners do not want you to take a parking place in front of their store and have it there all day. They want that space to turn over and have 10 different cars there because that's 10 different people who might come into their store. So, in some neighborhoods, you really want to be able to park all day. Maybe you could have you can buy a space for all week if you only use your car on the weekends, whatever you want to do. But in the case of stores, they want lots of turnover. And so you can use the amount of time you can buy, the price per minute, those kinds of things. And that's the way the rest of the world works. Only in government would you say, that's not fair. It is fair.
Aren't the meters designed to manage the limited space and that the revenue is really secondary? I mean, isn't the revenue is the carrot? But the streets are owned by the taxpayers,
right? Okay, but that's like saying we shouldn't take any fines. Or if you run a red light and you get fined, we should take your check, convert it into cash, and burn it. That's ridiculous. We can use that to pay for lots of things in this city. Nobody, you shouldn't put in a law just to catch people who aren't doing anything wrong and take the money out of their pocket. But fines are and fees are designed to encourage or discourage different kinds of activity. And the money that they bring in is simply reduces the amount of taxes. When people say, I don't want to have any fees or fines, well, fine, then your taxes are going to go up. We're still going to spend the same amount of money. But when you target a fee or a fine, that's to keep people from running through a red light or to, if they want to use a particular service, pay for part of it. We do it, for example, with the MTA. We charge you as you go through the turnstile, but that's a small percentage of the total cost of your ride. The general taxpayer also pays, and it's a combination.
I saw you on television, national television this week, talking about your, I guess, competition for mayors of America and that your foundation is going to throw up some money to do that.
Or get them to do what?
My question is, what do you think the foundation focuses
on the environment and public health and education and the arts, but also on government. And the idea here is to see if people can come up with some ideas that will let governments, city governments, because that's what's focused on, be a lot more responsive and provide a lot better service. And so the winner will have come up with something, hopefully, that does those things, really either gives you accessibility or efficiencies or new services, but also it has to be transferable to lots of other cities. And it's $5 million prize for the city that does the best job and comes up with the best idea. And then there are four $1 million prizes because we wanted to make sure small cities could compete as well. New York is not eligible and Newark is not eligible. Newark because Cory Booker is on the board of the foundation. He's the mayor and New York City, obviously, since I'm there and you don't want anybody to think the books are cooked. And we've got an outside group, somebody from McKinsey, somebody from Google, two phenomenal people with a lot of experience. We'll put together for them a team. They'll evaluate the proposals. The 20 finalists will come in and we'll work with each one to see if we can't give them other ideas and help them to package it and make it even better because we're not trying to put one against another. We're trying to come up with the best ideas. And then in the spring, we'll announce the winners. And if it really works, we'll do it again.
So this is just an idea generating.
That's exactly right. And $5 million to most cities, plus the ability to say for the mayor and the city council, say, hey, we came up, we're really avant-garde here. This is a city of the future. Look what we're doing. We won the prize. That's a very big deal, we think, and we've done a lot of surveys. And
what sort of ideas do you have in your head? I know you can't describe them.
Things that did work before. Okay. 311. Now, actually, that wasn't our idea. I think it was Chicago that did it first, but somebody else did it first. But doing that and taking it to other levels and letting you email in, and there's an app now, 311, that there you can just hit a button and it reports the pothole, and there's a lot of those kinds of things that the restaurant grades. Since restaurant grades went in, the number of cases of salmonella, which is basically food poisoning, show up at the hospitals has gone down 15 to 20%. So it really does make a difference. And these are the kinds of things that the cities can't submit things they've already done. They could submit something they've already done if they have a plan to take it to a whole new level. But the idea is to come up with new things, and it'll all be shared. Anybody that wants to do it, great.
I was a little nervous this morning because in my office, where you go before you come on the air here for a cup of coffee, there's a gigantic bag of popcorn.
I saw that. What was that there?
Well, I just was afraid that you were going to maybe throw it away or something.
No, I ate one piece. I did. I reached in and I took one piece just to see.
JJ actually brought it to us the other day when she was shopping.
I was going to say it was not exactly what we'd call fresh popcorn.
Well, it's been around a while, but it is a while.
This could have been around for months.
It's an enormous bag. I got to come back to the milkshakes and the popcorn.
I love popcorn.
Me too.
Look, anything in moderation cigarettes in moderation are not good, but a full sugar drink in moderation. And in all,
are you surprised at the there was very negative, and it has the pendulum has swung over the course of 10 days.
This will be a big thing. Obesity and the effects of obesity are the biggest public health issue across this country. There are going to be more people dying from the effects of obesity than smoking in another couple of years. It is a very big problem, and it's like smoking, very preventable. In all fairness, the beverage companies aren't the only reason, their products aren't the only reason people have put on a lot of weight. Portion size in beverages and in food have gone up dramatically over the last 20 or 30 years. And in fact, the beverage companies, you know, Coke and Pepsi, understand that their clients, they want to keep their clients healthy, and they've done work very hard to try to make healthier products and get people to take them. Instead of the products that have a lot more calories. Now, even with the products with a lot more calories, if you have one can of Coke or Pepsi, it's not a big deal. You work that off. It's, you know, 150, 200 calories, whatever it is. If you have three or four cans and you do it every day, you got a problem. And so, like everything else, in moderation, and everybody made a big joke about donuts because we had National Donut Day, which turned out to be something for the World War One women who gave donuts.
Salvation Army.
But, you know, I love a Dunkin' Donut, and one of them's fine. But if I ate, you know, three or four Dunkin' Donuts a week or four, that would put on a lot of weight. And then, you know, it just...
I have heard some people say some terrible things about Michael Bloomberg over this. I mean, it's almost stunning, some of the stuff.
They said that about smoking, too, and today. I mean, there are a number of people who wrote nasty articles about smoking, op-ed pieces, and then years later said, I just want you to know I can't say it, but you saved my life. You know, thank you very much. And today, the smoking ban is very popular. This will be as well, as people adjust and you find other things to do with it. And keep in mind, we're not prohibiting you from doing anything. The only one, and this is such a minor proposal compared to all the other things that a lot of public health officials would like to do. All this says is not in a store, because we don't regulate stores. The state government does that. But in restaurants and movie theaters and street carts, they can't use a cup bigger than 16 ounces. So if you want to walk in and buy 32 ounces, how you'd ever drink 32 ounces, I don't know. But if you want to do that, the store can give it to you at the same price. They just have to use two cups. And the idea is that you will probably, after using one cup, not go to the second cup, or you won't even take the second cup. And therefore, it will reduce the number of calories you take. It's not a panacea for anything, but it's a step in the right direction. And now I think you will see across this country, there's going to be a lot more of people now willing to stand up and do some things. Some places will outlaw certain things, which we've not done. Some things will increase taxes, which we're not doing. But you're going to start seeing across this country the same kind of thing that you saw with smoking, because you go to hospitals, the number of people, John, who are now becoming blind or losing limbs.
Diabetes.
The doctors will tell you they see six-year-olds that have stage 2 diabetes, which is what a 19-year-old would typically have. When 19-year-old is, when they look at their body and they look like a 60-year-old when they do the tests, this is really almost overnight, coming to the fore. A lot of this happened, but nobody focused on it. Now, all of a sudden, you see that person with who's lost a leg? Take a look.
Yeah, no, I've seen the statistics. I've actually seen the
pictures. Yeah, life expectancy in New York City is 3 years greater than the country as a whole. And in neighborhoods where people drink a lot of full sugar drinks, generally, life expectancy is lower. We got to do something about that.
All right, what we're going to do next, Mr. Mayor, is go to our full bank of phones. So stick around for that. Right here, we're sponsored by... We continue
before
here.
I forget, I just checked, and this taxi bill for prostitutes,
yep,
it only applies for a second offense if the driver had been convicted of participating, soliciting, whatever, and he's got to do it knowingly, or he or she has got to do it knowingly.
Gotcha. Let's go to line one here, and this is Brian. Brian, you've got the mayor. Go ahead.
Hi.
The soda ban seems very arbitrary. As you mentioned a few minutes ago, the soda is not the real cause for obesity. Why not give tax breaks for gym memberships?
Well, number one, it's not a ban on soda, remember. It's just a requirement that you can't use more than a 16-ounce cup, and lots of people get much smaller Coke cells of 6-ounce can, 12-ounce can, and a lot of 16-ounce bottles. So it's not a ban on anything. Exercise is great for you. You should do it. It's good for your heart. It's good for your mental state. But you have to run for 30 minutes, let's say, to use up the calories in a 250 calorie drink. And that just, if you drink three things, three cans or three of those drinks a day, nobody has time, or almost nobody has time to do that. So exercise is great, but it really has very little to do with obesity. Most people who are obese don't exercise at all. That is true. But the biggest problem they have is just consuming too many calories. It's thermodynamics.
All right, Brian, thank you. Frank in Whitestone, good morning. You've got the mayor.
Good morning, Frank.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Your words were about 10 minutes ago. The hubris of two naked school teachers having a lesbian affair in the schoolroom. I mean, this is really over the top. They should be fired. However, my problem here is the judge, Alice Schlesinger. Where does she come up with this tirade against Board of Education, against the city of New York, for treating these two teachers so harshly to deprive the students of a valuable education?
You know, Frank, I don't know where the judge comes up with it. I got to be careful and not... You know, I think her decision was totally wrong. It's not the government's business or the sexuality of teachers, but in the classroom, in the school, the behavior is the standard is different. Now, you can have your personal life outside of school. I do not think we should have a test for what's right and what's wrong. Generally, there are standards of teachers that if you go off the deep end, but this is a case of two teachers who were doing something in the school which was totally inappropriate, and the judgment that they showed in doing that says to us that they should not be in the school, in the classroom. Needless to say, the union thinks it's hunky-dory. This judge went off the deep end and said that. I don't know that we can appeal, but this is what we face every day.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we unfortunately have run out of time. We'll have to make this a two-hour program.
You're going to be here another hour.
Well, I'll be listening to you. I hope you would, sir. Thank you very much. I know you're off to the city golf thing today, right?
The Mayor's Cup at Split Rock, and I'm going to play the same hole with every foursome that comes through. They're all people who are donating money to the City Parks Foundation, which does some great work for our kids.
All right, Mr. Mayor, enjoy that, and we'll see you next Friday. Dean Skelos, David Gregory, two of the people you're going to hear coming up on the...